Hello, everyone. Birshus, Rav Schechter, Rav Cohen, Rav Leibowitz, Rav Schwartz, other Rosh Yeshiva who are here. It's our pleasure to welcome you to the annual Dr. Abraham S. and Phyllis Weissman Memorial Rabbinic Lecture. I think it's a couple of years since we did this in person. So, Shechiyana v'kiyamana v'giyana l'zman hazeh, they were able to do this mostly in person this year. Dr. Charlie Weissman is on Zoom, I assume. Where's the camera screen? Something? Oh, the real thing. Okay, wonderful. We welcome those who are watching us on Zoom, and we welcome Evelyn Bahar, who is dutifully here and enjoys these lectures so much here upstairs. This year, the lecture will be given by our Talmud, Daniel Israel, and we welcome his father, Rabbi Ari Israel, who is here somewhere, I assume. Hello. So wonderful to see you, Musmach of our yeshiva. Daniel and his family, of course, are from Silver Spring, Maryland. He was in the yeshiva of Greater Washington by Rabbi Lopiansky and went to Shalvim. And now he is in to YU and then Smicha, currently in Rabbi Leibowitz's shir. He's currently a first-year medical student as well in the New York Medical College. He's actually a third generation YU student and a second generation REITs. This lecture was established by the family in memory, and what a beautiful way to keep the memory of someone alive, of Dr. Abraham Weissman, who was a family practitioner who had a private practice in Washington Heights for about 60 years. And he was the doctor to the Rav, doctor to the Panovitcher Rav, and many of the Talmidim here who are in the yeshiva. And as many doctors are able to do so in their practice, but I think sometimes I feel this more of some of the doctors of the past generation. Dr. Feinberg, who I know from Forest Hills, who was the doctor for many of the Talmidim in the Chafetz Chaim, and Dr. Weissman, who's doctor to so many of the Talmidim here, is a doctor who, just by their very nature, and by the things that they say when they were examining, gives you a real sense of emuna, really builds your emuna and helps you understand who the real Rofei Cholim is, even as they provide their time and volunteer and their services to so many of the Talmidim of the yeshiva. He was a great family man and on the board of Yeshiva Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, which of course used to be here in Washington Heights. Daniel's topic is, I'm curious how many of you understand the topic before he gets up here, but it is on halachic perspectives of xenotransplantation and other contemporary transplant dilemmas. And we are excited to hear his words. I want to note in the back the presence of our vice president, Rabbi Russ Schulz, so many others who are here. I see Rabbi Neuberger, I see Rabbi Radner, Rabbi Taubes from our office, and so many others. I think we'd have to call out almost every name, I guess, here. But the members of the Kohl, Baruch Hashem, and Bishus Rav Schechter and the other Rosh Yeshiva, we call upon Daniel for this year's lecture.
First of all, I appreciate that the title is intimidating. Shout out to the people who texted me. I just jumbled a bunch of words on their keyboard and said that should be the title of your next year. But we'll try to explain it as simple as possible. So I just want to start by first thanking the Weissman family, especially to Mrs. Bahar, who came in person today, for sponsoring this year and the opportunity to learn together in honor and Lezecho Nishmas, Dr. Weissman. I was speaking with Rav Schechter just yesterday. He was reflecting so fondly on Dr. Weissman, on the kind of person he was, a community physician who served the community of Washington Heights, and a Yari Shemayim, who, from what I understand, embodied the very same values I aspire for in my own life. I'm also humbled, as I ask Rosh Shus, to speak in front of my Rebbeim, the Rosh Yeshiva, who are here, Rav Neuberger, Rav Schechter, Rav Leibowitz, and everyone else, who came. And the opportunity to carry on the legacy of people like Dr. Weissman is a great opportunity for us here today. I hope this year today and our collective learning together honors his memory and brings you, the Weissman family, much nachas. I also want to express my appreciation to Dr. Joseph Rabin, a heart and lung transplant surgeon at the University of Maryland, who's taken me under his wing to mentor me these past several years and ignited in me the interest in organ transplantation. I also want to take the opportunity to express my Karzah Tov to my parents for supporting me and allowing me to learn here in Yeshiva. It's not a gift that I take for granted, and I'm thankful for it every day. I want to especially thank my Abba, who traveled all the way from Maryland just to be here today. Something my friends, my Chavrusas, and my Rebbeim know very well is how proud I am of my father, who's a Musmach of our Yeshiva, who sat in Rav Shechter Shlita's Shir, and how lucky I feel to be following in his footsteps. Growing up as a child, I remember my Zaidi, Olav HaShalom, coming to hear my father when he was starting to be Marbitz Torah in Rochester, New York. So to have my father here today with me and seeing that full circle is something that's that means a great deal to me. So I want to direct everyone's attention to the back of the packet. It's a tshuva from Moshe Feinstein. I'm going to start at the second half of the page. It's a tshuva he wrote in 1968. 1968, for those who don't know, was the first year during which a heart transplant occurred in the United States. It was a very novel and very scary thing. People didn't know what to make of it. Somebody asked Rav Moshe what he thought. So you could see an underlined portion, Hasha'ela ba'ashtelas halev, with regards to heart transplantation, l'cholam ish acher, she'ischilu rofim achadim la'asoseh. Somebody asked him about heart transplantation. And he thinks, next underline, kishtias halev she'ischilu rofim la'asos bezmana acheron uritzichas shtei nefashos mamash. He thinks it's murder. And the next underline, v'gam horgim v'yadayim mechayim mamash l'har be'shonim, they're murdering one person by taking away their life, and also the recipient probably won't even get off the table or live very long. And he says the next one, upela afal amalchios shebechol amadinos shemanichim l'rof marashoyim l'rtzach shtei nefashos bechol pam. He thinks it's a pella. How could the countries allow such murder to go rampant? He thinks the doctors should be held responsible. And in the very same tshuva, if you look on the top of the page, he was regarding organ transplantation in general. Aval mitzvah vada'ika. There's a mitzvah to give an organ. It's going to apply to giving your blood, giving a kidney. For those who don't know, Rabbi Leibowitz, who my Rebbe is here, has given a kidney, something, the most incredible selfless act that I can imagine. And Rav Moshe says, it's not only a mitzvah, but it's v'gam humidas chasidus. So we know Rabbi Leibowitz is a Shomer Torah mitzvah, so we didn't know he was a chasid until today. But I just thought it was interesting in this tshuva of Rav Moshe to point out that on the one hand, Rav Moshe can see organ transplantation as a mitzvah, as something so close to saving lives, and on the other hand, see that it has potential to cause murder in the same tshuva. And I think the important thing to point out is that going through life, especially going through life as a physician, which we're here to celebrate Dr. Weissman's life today, and the person I think who he was, from what I've heard, somebody who understood their core value is to be a Torah Yid, a Yerei Shamayim, and to see the life as a physician through that lens and not the other way around is something which is so important and something that I hope to take with me on my own life. So now let's jump into our sugya today. I'm going to give a background on transplants. Don't worry, I'm not going to talk about brain death or anything like that. It's a powder keg I'm not getting involved in. Might be a little bit beyond my pay grade as an almost doctor and almost rabbi. But just starting off, when we're talking about somebody who is dead, l'chol hadeos, can we take their organs and save somebody's life? So the first isra that comes to mind is the isra of lo salin. There's a famous pasuk. If somebody dies, you have a mitzvah to bury them right away, and you should not delay. The first source, lo salin of lasso al eitz, you should not leave somebody to hang. If you cover sick burn by Yomahu, you have a mitzvah to bury them on that day. Kikil esalokim taloi, because it is a kil esalokim to leave them there. Rashi ala pasuk says, second source, she'adam asu b'dmustiyukno v'yisrael him bana, because we're created in the image of Hashem, and to leave us there overnight is a bizarre for Hashem. And the Shulchan Aruch brings us in Yoredeya, asr lahalin hames, el imken elin l'chvoda. It's asr to, this is a foresh halacha, you can't leave a mace laying there too long. Second issue that comes up, it's discussed in Poskim, is the Isser HaNam in a mace. You can't get benefit from a dead body. And the Gemara of Avodah Zarah says, Umeis Kufa Minalan, how do I know that I can't, in source four, how do I know that there is an Isser to get Hana'ah from a dead body? It proves the Gezer Shava from Egla Rufa. The Pasuk says, Shom by Miriam when she passed away. And the Pasuk says, Shom by Egla Rufa. And the next underline, Malahalan Isser Bahana'ah, Afka Nami Asser Bahana'ah. So too, by dead bodies, there is an Isser Bahana'ah, just like there is by Egla Rufa. Just going on, also continuing in Isser HaNa'ah, the Gemara Nida, Dvar Torah or Adam Tahor. Ula thinks that Midoraisa, the skin of a person, is Tahor. And Tosfos over there says, Vim Tomar, Behalo Mace Asr Bahana'ah. He asks our question, what about a don't we know so clearly that a Mace is Asr Bahana'ah? How could Ula think that the Or of Adam is Tahor? So there's one opinion in Tosfos, which we do not paskin like, but Tosfos brings us Nira de Or Enu Bechlal Basr Le Asr Bahana'ah. An opinion here, I wrote a note. I tried to include translations as much as I could. Some things I wrote on my own, so I'm sure you'll be able to tell the difference. An opinion here noted in Tosfos that or the skin of a person is not included in the category of basar and is therefore not under the same rules of Isser HaNa'ah. And the halacha in Yerodea in source 7 is Meis Bein Ovid Kochavim Bein Yisrael Tachricha Vasurim Ba'ana'ah. And here the Shulchan Aruch says not only is the mace, a Jewish mace, Asur Bahana'ah, but also a non-Jewish mace is also Asur Bahana'ah. This is the opinion of the Shulchan Aruch. It's not the opinion of most Rishonim. The Shulchan Aruch proves it from a Tshuvas HaRashba that a non-Jewish mace is also Asur Bahana'ah, but we paskin that only a Jewish mace is Asur Bahana'ah. This has big ramifications because in my first year of medical school, we learn anatomy by cutting into a dead body, a cadaver. And on the first day of medical school, all of the Jews got together and we were assigned bodies that were specifically identified as not Jewish for this reason, because we're getting Hana, we're benefiting, we're learning about medicine. And it was important to not get that Hana from a Jewish body. And the answer for the Shulchan Aruch is that the Shulchan Aruch was really only assuming that there was an Isser Bahana for a non-Jew because it's a bizayin to cut into a mace. But nowadays, it's looked at as a big kavod to donate your body to science, to medicine. So it's no longer a bizayin. So for a non-Jew to donate their body, for us to learn from that is looked at as a kavodic thing and very nice. So therefore, the Isser Hana should only be limited to Jews. So that's two. We have first one, lo selin, you can't delay burial. The second one, Isser Hana. Comes the third one, is nivel hamace, desecrating a dead body. I'm in source 8. There's a story, I'll read it inside. There was somebody who sold his father's property or his nechasim, umes, and the person who sold it, the child, died. And the relatives said, he was a katan b'shas misa, the sale was no good, we want our father's nechasim back, because a katan can't sell the nechasim of his father. Can we go dig up his body and find out if he was a katan, to exhume the body, to do an autopsy, basically. You cannot be menavel the mace. From here, we learn the halacha of nivel hamace. You cannot desecrate a dead body. So now we have three. The first is lo selin, the second is hana'ah, and the third thing is nivel hamace. So sounds like, from what I hear so far, slam dunk. You shouldn't be touching dead bodies. You shouldn't get anything from them. What I learned from this and through my learning is that Jews don't like to hear the word no, so they'll push a little more. And they like to push the envelope. So the question was raised, a very famous tshuva of the Noda B'Yehuda, of can a person do an autopsy? A very interesting question. I'm in source 9. There was I'll say the case outside. Somebody came and had gallstones, an issue in their belly, and they had to do surgery to help them. And the surgery was unsuccessful because most likely they didn't really know what they were doing. They were cutting around hoping to help. They killed him. So the doctors approached the Noda B'Yehuda, who lived in the 18th century in Poland, a time when autopsies were first becoming regular practice throughout Europe and legalized. So they asked the Noda B'Yehuda, would it be allowed? Because if I go ahead and cut open this person, maybe I'll be able to save a future patient who has a similar issue, in which case it might be a potential pikuach nefesh situation, And I'm reading the end of that first paragraph in source 9. In Yesh Baze Isser Mishum De Ispe Nivel, our question of Nivel Hames, of desecrating a dead body, Ubizayon Lahames Hazeh, and it would be a Bizayon to go ahead and cut open the dead body. Oh, and Mutzer should be allowed Mishum De Asi Mine Atzalas Nefashos Lahaba. In the future, there might come cases similar to this. So maybe that would be a reason to allow for Nivel Hames to go ahead and dig up this dead body. So the Noda Behuda goes on. I'm on the next page. He says, if it's clear in front of you, Hatzalas Nefashos, then for sure, I don't need to come on to any big lumdus. I'm on that middle underline. Avbeni don didon ein kan shum chol atzarach lazeh. Rak shelo rotim lemon chachma zu ulay yizdam in chol ashi atzarach lazeh. In the underline in the English, in our case, says the Noda Behuda, there's no ill person who needs this. They want to study this discipline in case they encounter a sick person who requires it. So says the Noda Behuda, a famous distinction, which is called the distinction of Lefanenu. If you have a dead person in front, a pikuach nefesh case in front of you, he might permit a biza hames, a nivel hames. But in this case, it's only maybe that it'll come about the same thing, in which case he doesn't allow it. And he says further at the end of the paragraph, v'imanu chas v'shalom akilu medavrezeh, if we would go ahead and be lax in this, imkein yinatchu kol hamesim kedei lumod sidir revarim apnimin, there will be no more respect for dead bodies. People will just be cutting people open left and right. And he doesn't like that. And he thinks that the person who was matir this, thinks it was a big mistake to go ahead and allow this. The person apparently allowed it in this case. And Noda Behuda thought that was not okay. Sam Sofer famously also agrees with the Noda Behuda on source 10. Elefisha sakadaitach shalashalahu. He says there was pikuach nefesh. Maybe there was potential. The shoal, the one who asked the Noda Behuda the question, thought maybe there's going to be a potential for pikuach nefesh, in which case I should be able to cut up the dead body and to be able to find healing and to help people out. And and the Chassam Sofer also says two things here. I'm on the second to last underline in the Chassam Sofer. Mishurot zilimko atzam b'chiyus l'rofim. Someone wants to sell themselves to a rofe, that they should be able to do an autopsy on him, to learn something from it, to be able to help people in the future. He doesn't think that's considered pikuach nefesh, because if that would be pikuach nefesh, then any case of potential refuah that may come about in the future should be even docha Shabbos. So therefore, he thinks it would be an enel davar sof, and you have to draw the line somewhere. So he seems to concur with the Noda Behuda about this inyan of lefanenu. If you have a bikuach nefesh case in front of you, which can help somebody, that would be one thing. But in this case, where there's only a potential, maybe in the future it will happen, he doesn't think that's true. And also, an interesting point I thought also, he ends off that a person has no right to be mochel on this nivel. A person could say, you know what, I don't really care. I want my body to be dug up. I want science to be furthered through the digging up of my body. And he says a person has no right on that. See the last line. If you don't have the rachmanus on Hashem, who are you to allow somebody to cut in the dead body to the body that Hashem gave you? Better that you shouldn't have come into the world at all. And the Chazon Ish, just ending off this point about autopsies, the Chazon Ish famously extends this distinction of Lefanenu. And he thinks veina chilek bein isa kaman leisa kaman ela im matzoi hadavar. The chilek is not whether the person is physically in front of you or not physically in front of you. Rather, if it's matzoi, if I could help somebody out somewhere through this act, then it would be allowed. But it doesn't have to be lefanenu mamish. And I heard a shir from Rabbi Leibowitz in Avelos, where he was talking about a distinction where a person who dies and they want to retrieve their kidney to help somebody. So a big nafkamina would come out based on the first understanding of the Noda Behuda. If it's lefanenu mamish, then you would only be allowed to do that potentially if the person who needs the kidney is in the same place, is in the same hospital. But based on our now understanding of the Chazon Ish, which is accepted by most poskim, it doesn't have to be lefanenu mamish, that he's right in front of you. Rather, it would be okay if it could help somebody out. And chances are that if you take somebody's kidney, somebody's going to need it. And And that would be enough of a reason to do this, what we're calling nivul. Now, the Binyan Tzion, however, argues on this opinion of the Nodeh Bihuda. And he thinks that just because the person's lefaneinu, the Binyan Tzion thinks that even if you had somebody who was bikuach nefesh mamish sitting in front of you who needed this, you have no right to be manavel mace. You have no right to be cutting into a dead body. Because he thinks that the whole reason why a person is allowed to be manavel, the reason why a person should be able to do pikuach nefesh in the first place is because of the mitzvah of saving lives. But the Binyan Tzion says, dead people we know are chafshi min ha-mitzvos. So a dead person going ahead and doing the mitzvah of saving a life, the person has no obligation to do mitzvos and is chafshi from that. So to do nivel on such a person, the Binyan Tzion thinks would not be appropriate. And he thinks that nir la niyastaiti, at the end of that, tshuva the Binyan Tzion on the left column, asr lahatzil achaya debizo hames, it would be asr to even save somebody, even if they were in front of you. Even if you had somebody that needed a kidney in front of you right now, it would be usher to take it from a dead body. He thinks another reason, because the vados is the obviousness of what's going to happen is I'm going to cut this person open. That's going to be a bizoy. That's going to be a nivel. That's going to be desecration of the person in front of you. Maybe I'll be able to save his life with the kidney. That's a suffix. So he says, better to be sheva al taisa than to go ahead and do this. The assumption of most poskim is like the Nodeh Bihuda and the Chazon Ish and the Chasam Sofer, and not like this Binyan Tzion. However, the Tzitz Eliezer did paskin like this Binyan Tzion in his Shuvas. He paskin like it lehalacha, and however most poskim that we assume like nowadays do not. So a big nafkamina that comes out is the Indian, the first Indian I want to talk about is cornea transplants. If a person is without their sight because of their cornea is not functioning, cornea is something that's vital to our vision. So if the cornea is not functioning, a person can get a cornea from somebody who has died and save their vision. So the question that I thought of with regarding to this was, can we consider the cornea, the saving of a person's vision? Is it going to be pikuach nefesh or not? Right? If you think that saving someone's vision is pikuach nefesh, then we can have what to rely on, the Chasam Sofer, the Nodeh Bihuda, that it would be allowed. Let's say, and also this would be a non-starter, even if you would think it's pikuach nefesh, it would be a non-starter for the Binyan Tzion or for the Tzitz Eliezer. I think it's in Chelek Yud Gimel. That would be a non-starter. But let's say you assume that it's not pikuach nefesh. Let's say, for all intents and purposes, a person has vision in one of their eyes, and they want to replace the vision in their other working, in their non-working eye. So no one would think that that's pikuach nefesh, because a person can live many years with just one eye. And this that we say that in Asuma is chashav kames, we don't say that practically lahalacha lemaisa. But can a person live many years with just one eye? Sure. But can you go ahead and do nivel hames? Can you desecrate a dead body to save somebody's vision partially? If we're assuming it's not pikuach nefesh. So la'alacha, this was brought in the Shevet Miyehuda in source 13 by Rav Isser Yehuda Unterman, who was the Ashkenazic chief rabbi in Israel in the 1960s. Uv inyan krum ha'ayin, and with regards to corneal transplants. Because he thinks it's one of the most prominent, common procedures done nowadays. In the U.S., it's the second most common transplant, second to blood. But he thinks that you can think of the cornea as maybe being allowed to be benefited from. And the distinction he makes is considering the cornea like potentially like the or, like the skin of a person. Right, because if you remember what we said before in the Gemara and Nida, and it was Ula's opinion that or is not considered asur midoraisa. So if you think that the cornea of a person is like the flesh, is like a vital organ, so therefore you would not be allowed to touch that, or it would be asur midoraisa. But if you think that the cornea of a person is like the skin, like the ore. So it might even be, according to that opinion in Tosfos that we saw, it might even be only Asur Midrabbanan. So in which case, even if you don't think that it's Pikuach Nefesh to give somebody their sight back, it would be mutter to take somebody to do this nivul, which is only Asur Midrabbanan, to give somebody that sight back. So Rav Unterman in that tshuva that you have in front of you, here it is, in that tshuva he thinks that he has at least a havamina, that the or that the skin of a person and the cornea and the eye are the same. The question is, like, where does that really come from? L'chora, the or and the cornea are very different. The or is the skin. The eye is part of our central nervous system, and especially when a baby is growing. So to say that it's included in skin and that lower level is hard to say. So the first opinion that's given in Rav Unterman's tshuva, it's long, I didn't print the whole thing. But the first opinion that he gives is that, you know what, it's kind of a lower level nivel to cut out the cornea of a dead person, because lemaisa, when you bury them, they close their eyes, you can't tell the difference between a dead person who has a cornea and a dead person who hasn't, who doesn't have one. It's not the same level of nivel of going into their abdomen and taking out their kidney. That's a tremendous desecration. But to cut out their cornea, he thinks, if you would go up to a blind person who has no chance of ever recovering their vision, can I have your cornea to give somebody their vision? Thinks potentially a blind person would be okay with that because they have no use of it anyway. And it's not considered a great nivel. So that's one option that he gives. Second thing I thought of as I was preparing the shiur, which it's a little drushy, so bear with me for a second, to remember what we're trying to do. We're trying to establish that the aura of a person and the eye are the same status, lahalacha, and not considered like a vital organ, which is maybe going to allow us to do a cornea transplant. So I thought, in the Torah, where does it say the word or? When Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, the pasuk says that his face was shining, kikiran or panav, because Moshe Rabbeinu's face, when he came down from Har Sinai, was shining. It says the or of his face was shining. So what does it mean, the or was shining? What does or mean? So we understand or to mean skin, right? At the end of the Torah, when Moshe Rabbeinu dies, it says about Moshe Rabbeinu that lo chasayino, his eyes never dimmed. So the Klal Yikra and the Chizkuni say on that pasuk that from here we learned that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, what was shining? It was his einayim, it was his eyes that were shining. So I think from here we have a raya for this shita, maybe a potential raya at least, that the or, at least in the Torah, in one avenue, the or and the einayim have some connection with this proof from Moshe Rabbeinu. So now that I'm going to now move into the topic that gave everyone a little fright, xenotransplantation. So what does that mean? So the word xenotransplantation literally means to transplant something xeno, which is strange or non-human, to take something from a non-human source and place it into a person. Would that be allowed? So the first time this came up, the first xenotransplantation came actually with a heart of a baboon. In 1984, there was a baby born. It's a famous case called the baby Faye. The baby was born with a congenital heart defect called the hyperplastic left heart syndrome, which is a developmental complication where the left side of the heart doesn't develop properly, which doesn't allow the blood to get around the body. So at the time, there was really no hope for this baby. And what they did was they gave the baby a heart from a baboon, it's in an attempt to preserve her life long enough until a human heart could be made available. For we know like how dire the circumstances are about transplants, how many people are in need, and how few organs there are. So it was a sort of a last ditch effort to get this baboon heart into a baby and to help save her life. The baby died, however, just 20 days later when her body rejected the foreign tissue. So one can imagine the desperation, how exciting it would be to procure organs from non-human sources. We would save all of our brain death questions. We would save all of our questions today about nivel, about hana, and losalin, and all of these questions about desecrating a dead body if we could just get our organs from an animal. So this has been long under study. The FDA famously is hesitant about getting organs from non-human sources for two main reasons. The first one is the issue of rejection. Sorry, the likelihood of rejection is very high. Likelihood of rejection in a human to human organ is already so high that a person who gets an organ has to be on medications for the rest of their life. Am I right about that? Yeah. For the rest of their life to avoid such rejection, to avoid, because a human body knows what's supposed to be inside. To put something that doesn't belong there, the human body starts rejecting it. It thinks it's foreign, so it tries to get rid of it. Now, to put something that's not only not yours, but it's also not human, so the human body goes crazy. It says, get this out of me. So that is the first big deal. The FDA was very hesitant about that. The second thing that the FDA was hesitant about and reason why they put a big limit onto this this research was because the fear that viruses would jump from animals into humans, which is obviously the most famous case of this, is how PIV, or primate immunodeficiency virus, became HIV, the human immunodeficiency virus. So the fear that when I eat an animal into my digestive system, it stays within my digestive system and it doesn't have any risk of getting me sick. But to expose it to my blood, to expose it to my circulation, can put me at risk of great sickness, of great virus. And I think it was in the late 1990s, they found multiple instances in pigs, for sure, of viruses that were laying latent, that if they would put them into a human being, it can cause a huge epidemic. So that put a huge blockade on this research until in the early 2000s, and really in 2015, Harvard University announced that it was utilizing the DNA, mapping or planning machine, a technology called CRISPR. 2 years ago, my upperclassman, Jakey Bork, gave this talk, and he gave it about CRISPR. So I hope you all remember exactly what he said. but it's very interesting to think about this CRISPR, is the ability to go into the DNA of a person, or the DNA of, in this case, pigs or any animal, and to manipulate it in such a way that it would not be able to jump from, the viruses would not be able to jump from the pig into the human, either to kill them or to make sure that it wouldn't latch onto the human, even if it was alive. And the second thing they were able to do is to manipulate the genes so that it wouldn't get rejected as quickly. So that was a big step. But to take a step back, the whole concept of xenotransplantation, of jumping from a non-human source, it starts really in 1965, when the first, I'm sure everyone's familiar, that we use pig valves in our hearts all the time. For people that have a valve issue, we take them from one human to another. So from a pig into a human. In 1965 was the first one. Just a few other examples. In 1997, two surgeons in India performed a heart and lung transplant on from a pig into a human being, who died within 1 week of the surgery. And the two doctors were arrested and put in prison for culpable homicide. And in 2014, a Harvard study was published highlighting the effectiveness of temporarily using pig skin to treat burn victims as an effective cover until a more permanent graft or a human graft can be made available. And we use animal sources for lots of things, especially people with diabetes, really until the 1980s, people were relying on insulin from dogs to help them live full lives. And in 2017, surgeons in China, for the first time, linking back to what we were speaking about before, transplanted the cornea of a pig to restore sight into a human being. And finally, in January of this year, perhaps the most famous and the reason why I decided to talk about it today, a man in Maryland became the first person in the world to get a heart transplant from a pig. They modified 10 genes using this technology. Four of them were responsible for causing rejection. Six of them were also to prevent this jump virus from pig to human. The patient in question had an irregular heartbeat and wasn't allowed to get or wasn't qualified to receive a human organ. So he signed up to get this pig heart and died a short while later. But it was a big step in this direction. And the question is that allowed in halacha? So I asked Rav Schechter what he thought. He was like, of course it's allowed. A pig is mutter b'hana. What's the question? So I said, okay, so we won't have the shir, I don't know. but seriously, the pasuk in the Torah for sure says pigs, you can't eat them and you can't touch their carcasses. So I thought it'd be interesting to explore at least the hashkafa of merging a pig heart with our body. And I'll just start here in Kiddushin and Daf Mem Tesem of Beis in source 15. It talks about the lists of things of gifts that Hashem gave to the world. And the underline here, Asar Kav and Negaim Yardul Olam, 10 Kav of plagues descended to the world. And Chazirim, Tisha Natlu Chazirim, pigs took 9 of them. This is, I think, especially alluding to that point I was talking about before. Here, Chazal were way ahead of the game, and they understood that there's this risk of pigs or animals in general carry these sicknesses all the time. And that's one instance of why pigs are bad. The Mer Nevuchim, the Rambam talks about why pigs are so bad. I'll read it in English. The principal reason why the law forbids swine's flesh is to be found in the circumstance that its habits and its food are very dirty and loathsome. Pigs are just gross. So the Torah didn't want us to get involved with pigs. The Torah didn't want us eating them. The Torah wanted us to stay away from them. Even more so, the Torah is stricter about pigs much more than it are about regular treif animals. So I thought in Ashkafa, at least, in last week's Parsha, we spoke about Kilayim. We spoke about the mixing of two different species of plants or two species of animals, mixing them together. And the Pasuk in Vayikra says, Behem techol asarbiya kilayim. You should not let your animals mate in different kinds. There's a very famous Ramban al Torah, where you'll hear it if you listen to any medical ethics shir, and this is one of them, so get ready. The Ramban says, the underlined portion of how Markiv Shnei Minim, if you mix two minim together, Mishaneu Machish v'maisa bereishis, you're destroying and you're changing the Maisa bereishis, because God created the world in a certain way. He created pigs to be pigs and humans to be humans. He created certain plants to be one way and certain plants to be another way. And who are you to go mixing those together? If you do that, you're going ahead and destroying the Bria that Hashem created. Because you're Ke'ilu Yachshov, says the Ramban, Shelo Hishlam Hashem Be'olamo. It's like you're thinking that Hashem didn't create the world in the way that was complete, the way that it was supposed to be. And you think you're going to go help in the creation of the world, the hosif bo brios, to add new kinds of brios, to add new kinds of creatures. Who are you to do that? And the Sefer HaChinuch also agrees with the Ramban in the underlined portion. I'll read it in English. God, blessed be He, created His world with wisdom, with understanding, and with knowledge. He made and formed all the forms according to that which was fitting for its matter to be, to be designed the design of the world. So who are you to be going ahead and messing with that? Because we know in Bereishis, Hashem created the world and said, Vayara lekimas kol asher asav, hine tov mo'ot. And the next paragraph, lo yis'arvu haminin, you shouldn't be combining things together, pen yachsur shleimuson, because it will be a chesaron in their shleimus, v'lo yitzav alein berchaso, and Hashem will not give bracha to that sort of mixture. And therefore, he ends off the Sefer HaChinuch, Nimna'u mehar bia behemos kilayim. And therefore, there is a prohibition from mixing behemos. The Maharal, in his comments on Vayikra, he takes issue with what the Ramban says. He says, the Ramban makes one point about us messing with the Bria, but he says, are people familiar with the famous story between Turnus Rufus and Rabbi Akiva, where Turnus Rufus said to Rabbi Akiva, but God didn't create the world complete. Look at you. You have the need. Babies are born incomplete. You need a bris milah. And Rabbi Akiva outthought him and showed him a well-done cake or a bread. And he says, Hashem wants us to be osik in the bria. Hashem wants us to make this world better through our das. And the Maharal says, we don't think that's a chisaron in the Bria. Adrabah, a person's using the gifts that Hashem gave him to make this world a better place. Hashem doesn't want us to be mute. He wants us to thrive and to grow. That's the Maharal's issue with the Ramban. He doesn't answer it. And the Gemara in Chagiga also, which says here, behind the Amar Rish Lakish, Hashem calls himself Kel Shakai, Anihu Shamati Le'olam Dai. I'm the one who said, die, that I'm the one who created the world in a certain way, and I don't want it created anymore, it sounds like. So, seemingly a proof for the Ramban. The Beis Halevi says on that pasuk that Hashem told this to Avram Avinu, Ani Kel Shakai, Ishalach Lefane Ve'yasamim, told it this to him as at the same time he told him to do a bris milah. The same time he told him to fix a part of the Bria, he also said to him, Ani Kel Shakai, I created the world in a certain way. So I'm reading the underlined portion of the Beis Halevi here. King Gazra Chachmasa Yisparach Tesof Shatikun Vegamro Yihya Idei Maisa Adam V'chein Yihya Adla Besof. That a person, Hashem created the world. Maisa V'chein Yihya Adla Besof. Shal Asid Me'atikun Amro Asid Eretz Yisrael Shatosig Luskos. Eventually, when Hashem is Lasid Lavo, or when we're all Lasid Lavo, Hashem will create things complete. Now it's our responsibility to not only see the world and live here, but to make the world better and to use our das, our chachma and tuna to improve. And the last underline here, la adam shiig merena, and it's on us to make those completions, to make those improvements. And it's not a chisaron in the bria, rather it's a fulfillment of our purpose, of our tachlis. And that's why the Beis Halevi says, that's why Hashem chose this moment to tell Avram Avinu, Ani Kel Shakai. Because it's in this moment that he was telling us that we do have a place to fix. We do have a place to improve on. That in that moment, that is the biggest proof of Ani Kel Shakai. It's very famous that the Rav was very fond of this Beis Halevi in his explanation of Adam 1 and Adam 2, that our responsibility is to make the world and to v'kivshua, and to use our kochos not only to live here, but also to improve. And I thought this was a very fitting arachayim on the pasuk about pigs. Perish tanayu adavar. He thinks pigs are only not kosher because v'hu geira lo yigar, because a pig does not chew its cud. And it's a tanay. As long as a pig does not chew its cud, it's not kosher. Avala asid lavo, but when Mashiach comes, ya'ala geira, a pig will once again chew its cud, or will start to chew its cud, but yachzer lios mutter, and a pig will become kosher. Below sheyishar, below geira, and it won't kitor to lo teshune. And I find it's interesting to read that in English in the last part of the Arachayim, which will connect to what we mentioned at the beginning. It is not the Torah which will adapt to realities, or to science, or to nature, or to medicine, but the reality, science or medicine or anything in this world which must adapt to Torah. The laws of the Torah are immutable. The nature of the pig is not. I think this, what I alluded to in the Tshuva of Moshe that we started off with, and hopefully our goal in this world is that as we're living in a time in the Ikvus of the Mashiach, we're living in a time where we're starting to use pigs, which Be'enei Ha'olam are the grossest thing for sure for Jews. Everyone knows that a Jew can't eat a pig. But now we're living in a time where they're even taking a pig and putting its heart into a human being. If that is not the biggest embodiment of that Aruch Chaim, I'm not sure what is. To see this change in the Bria, to see how we're using things, are using our koach, like the Beis Halevi talked about, and the Maharal talked about, using our koach to the betterment of this world, is the greatest gift that we can give to Hashem, who gave us all these koachos in the first place. So thank you very much.